Syntech CD Productions, bringing the sounds of Islam to you.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
Life of Imam Bukhari, presented by Dr. Hisham Al-Awadi.
Inna alhamdulillah nahmaduhu wa nasta'inuhu wa nastahdihi wa nastaghfiruh wa na'udhu billahi min shururi anfusina wa min sayyiati a'malina man yahdihillahu fahuwa al-muhtad wa man yudlil falan tajida lahu waliyan murshida wa ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wahdahu la sharika lah وأشهد أن محمدًا عبد الله ورسوله أدى الأمانة وبلغ الرسالة ونصح لهذه الأمة فصلاة الله وسلامه عليه ألا إن أصدق الحديث كتاب الله وخير الهدي هدي محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم وشر الأمور محدثاتها وكل محدثة بدعة وكل بدعة ضلالة وكل ضلالة في النار. Brothers and sisters, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. I'm very happy to meet you all. Some faces seem to be familiar, and I am glad to see new faces as well. And I hope by the end of this day we would have come to know each other better and more. And who knows, in the future we might meet again in other occasions and in other circumstances. Please pray for me that everything goes well. I have given so many talks in the past, but every talk has got its own sense of newness in it. That's my nature, always tense at these circumstances, these conditions. I always want the best to come out of these events. I'm not the sort of person who just give talks for the sake of talks. I always pray that Allah gives me sincerity, ikhlas, and I pray that we leave a legacy in this country. I'm going to die. You are going to grow up, have children, but it's the children, it's the future of this country, in our new generation. This is what I'm concerned about. And this is why we talk about these personalities. I spoke in the past about the seerah of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and I'm still reading about the seerah. And I wish one day I will give a proper presentation about the seerah of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, because this is the classic example. I'm still reading about the Sahaba, I'm still reading about the Tabi'een, but I always feel that it is extremely beneficial to introduce our new generation to people that they think they are aware of and that they love so much, but in real fact they don't know anything about. They know only little about. Imam Ibn Kathir, for example, Imam Ibn Kathir, do you know that he was blind at the end of his life because of writing the tafsir of Ibn Kathir, the very tafsir that now you read in English? Imam Muslim, you will be surprised how he passed away. Imam Bukhari even, you will be surprised how he passed away. There were people that passed away in prison. Books written by someone like Imam Sarkhasi were written in prison, were written underground, because they were imprisoned underground. And at the top of the prison, the students stood behind the windows, looking down at Imam Sarkhasi, and Imam Sarkhasi dictating the book of Al-Mabsut, which is a classic book in the fiqh of Hanafi. And at the end of the book he says, this is what Imam Sarkhasi dictates from underground in prison. And the students are writing. These people are fascinating because they lived in extremely difficult conditions. Don't sometimes run into the risk of envying them because they lived a better Islamic life. Not necessarily. Some of them lived during the bad period of the Abbasite, under the Seljuks, etc., where there were oppression. They lived in extremely difficult conditions. They didn't have mobile phones. They didn't have cars, undergrounds. They traveled for months on camels. But what they had is determination. And this is what we lack. You see, technology does not create him. Does not create enthusiasm and determination. It facilitates it, it makes it easier, but it does not create it from zero. And the reason why these people are fascinating, not because they are dusted people from the past. Oh yes, Imam Bukhari, interesting. No, they are interesting because they provide us with a real model of how we should be and how we should react to our surround. Brothers and sisters, this is a book by Imam Ibn al-Jawzi. And Imam Ibn al-Jawzi is different than Imam Ibn al-Qayyim al-Jawziyya. Imam Ibn al-Jawzi was a scholar and a reminder, a wa'idh, a storyteller, someone who, if you want to cry, listen to him. He's, now we are glad that we have 100 students. No, Imam Ibn al-Jawzi, the minimum audience were 100,000. 100,000. And this is not an annual conference in Wembley Arena. No, no, this was a daily circle by Imam Ibn al-Jawzi. He wrote several books. He wrote a book called Al-Mudhish, The Fascinating, The Amazing. This is the book, Al-Mudhish. But he was interesting in the titles of his books. He wrote this book, which is called Kitabul Athkiya. Kitabul Athkiya. The Book of the Intelligent Ones. The Book of the Intelligent Ones. Mind you, he wrote another book, Kitabul Hamqa. Sorry to say it. The Book of the Stupid Ones. And the good thing about Imam Ibn al-Jawzi is that he's a good collector of stories. So, for example, Kitabul Athkiya is a compilation of stories about those people who were intelligent. He begins with the beginning of the book about talking about intelligence, talking about al-aql, the brain, the mind. So he talks about dhaka, he talks about intelligence. Then he talks about the prophets. And then rulers, intelligent rulers. And then intelligent sahaba. And then intelligent ulama. Throughout history, stories. Intelligent women. And at the end, the final chapter, even intelligent animals. But up the chapters, intelligent thieves. Intelligent worshippers. Intelligent, noisy people. People that were noisy. For example, there is a dinner and he wants to go into the dinner and he's not invited. And he thinks about a way in attending the dinner. Jumps over the, or writes an invitation for himself and says, I have an invitation, and he goes, or in our case, fakes a ticket and comes. Intelligent, even there is a chapter, intelligent, stupid people. People who were known to be stupid, but at particular instances, they behaved in a way that was intelligent. And you might smile, intelligent, mad people. People that were mad, known to be mad, talking to themselves day and night, but were intelligent. A fascinating book. What does he say in the beginning of that book, Imam Ibn al-Jawzi? He says, I wanted to collect in a book the stories of the intelligent ones for three purposes, and take these three purposes to be the purposes of this function today, talking about Imam Bukhari. The first purpose, that we may appreciate their standing and importance, the standing and importance of the people that are mentioned in that book. So my purpose here is to make you appreciate the standing and the importance of Imam Bukhari. Fine. One. Two. Second, to initiate, this is my project, if there is a project, inspired from Imam Ibn al-Jawzi and others. He says, تلقيح لباب السامعين إذا كان فيهم نوع استعداد لنيل تلك المرتبة وقد ثبت. You don't have to take every words and notes. You will become tired in a while and you will be overwhelmed by stories and names. Just if you want, just focus and listen and enjoy it. تلقيح لباب السامعين إذا كان فيهم نوع استعداد لنيل تلك المرتبة. Just for the records, I'm translating. I am mentioning it in Arabic, but let's go to the English. He says, second, that we may, to initiate the enthusiasm of the listeners or the readers. Most of his books were lectures, by the way. To initiate the enthusiasm of the listeners. If the listeners had the will and the desire to attain a higher status, this is the project. This is the purpose. My purpose is to initiate enthusiasm in you. If not in you, in your wives. If not in your wives, in your children, in your future, to initiate it, not to create it. I'm not going to create enthusiasm here. I'm here with you for 3 or 4 hours. But initiate it, revive it, to initiate enthusiasm of the listener. If you had the will and the desire to attain a higher status, if you think you are an angel, excellent, fair enough. Third, تأديب المعجب برأيه إذا سمع من تعسر عليه لحاقه. Third, humbling those who are proud of themselves when he, between brackets, or she, this is my translation, hears stories of those whom then he discovers are difficult to compete with. I am not here to impress you with how fascinating Imam Bukhari was in memory. You cannot compete with him. Neither your Dell or Microsoft or computer can, to be honest, and I'll prove it. A fascinating human being that I don't know how Bukhara could produce such a human being, Bukhari. But anyway, I'm not here to do that, to cripple you, to make you feel frustrated. No, no. But at the same time, I'm here to humble myself, thinking that I have attained Western education, PhD, blah, 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 and that those Bedouins that were riding the camels, what do they know? No, no. Humble yourself, because you cannot compete with them. Don't tell me that you have a watch. Don't tell me that you have a computer, a portable. You cannot compete with them. Then what is the solution? Why? How then are they practical? Well, if you want to attain a B in your studies, aim for an A. You're not going to be like Bukhari. Who knows? You might be. But at least when Bukhari and not David Beckham is your model, you will be close to Bukhari rather than too close to David Beckham. So models are important. Role models are important. Not necessarily that I will emulate them 100%. Duplicate. You cannot duplicate their circumstances. You are in Britain. You are not in Bukhara. Fine. But you can at least aspire to be like them. And this is the fourth purpose that I add to Imam Ibn al-Jawzi insofar as our function, Imam Bukhari, is concerned. My aim, that is, to make Imam Bukhari relevant to contemporary Muslims. No, no, no. Edited. To contemporary Muslims living in the West. And this is a challenging task. Difficult. Where are the shuyukh of Imam Bukhari? Where are they them today? We are not shuyukh, we are rubbish. We are all, what, coming here with notes and suits and ties? No, no. This is not genuine scholars in the traditional sense. But there are dimensions in the life of Imam Bukhari that are very relevant to you today. One dimension that I want you to focus on is that Imam Bukhari was given talents. He recognized these talents. He identified these talents. In his case, the talent was a powerful memory. He utilized this talent. Now, your task is not to try to kid yourself by saying that I have this talent of a powerful memory and try to emulate Bukhari, because then you will fail and become frustrated. No, your task, and that's how Imam Bukhari becomes relevant, is to identify your own talent and utilize it. Do you understand? Do you understand the difference? I am not here to make you frustrated about... I'm not here... Look, this is there is no hidden agenda here to make you frustrated that you don't know Arabic because the speaker knows Arabic. This is far from it. There is no hidden agenda here to make you leave your chemistry, psychology, biology, geography, and go for Talab al-Rihla in Yemen or Mauritania to study Hadith. This is not my agenda. If you have the talent, fine. Go today before tomorrow. But, no. The agenda is to initiate enthusiasm, to make you identify your personal talents, and serve the ummah in that talent, through that talent, like Imam Bukhari served the ummah through the talent of powerful memory. He became a muhaddith. He did not become a mufassir of the Quran. And if you sat with Imam Bukhari, told him, you know, why you are not a mufassir of... he will tell you that my talents are not the talents of a mufassir, but they are the talent of a muhaddith. Now, what are your talents? It might be a medic, an engineer, a psychologist. And if you identify your talents, maybe in the future, if a similar book like that was written, you will be in that book, because then you will be among the intelligent ones. And these intelligent ones had thieves in them. Had crazy people in them, not just muhaddithin, fuqaha, or mufassirin. This is by way of an introduction. Now, how are you going to manage the first lecture? From birth to teenage. I'm fascinated with birth and teenage because you always run the risk of people saying Imam Ibn Taymiyyah, Imam Ghazali, Imam Malik, Imam Abu Hanifa, Imam Bukhari were great people. And you think that they were great when they reached the age of 60. No. They were great from the day that they could utter words and that they could memorize the Quran. We are talking about people at the age of 10, 11, 12. You are far more older than Bukhari when he was at the age of 11. So you have to take the character and the personality in its entirety rather than taking it when he or she dies. Talking about he or she. Maybe in the future we will talk about Islamic personality of great women scholars. And men will be humiliated then when they listen about fascinating women. And I can talk to you hours and hours about women that have crippled men, including scholar men. Maybe in the future, shifting from women to children. There were children that crippled men and women. Those children could be your children. Those women could be your wives or sisters or mothers. So, from birth to teenage. We will talk about the personal details of Imam Bukhari. We'll talk about his childhood. We will talk about the household that brought Imam Bukhari, the father and the mother. We'll talk about the social and the political conditions and context that Imam Bukhari was living in, and then his teenage, and during his teenage, his travels, his activities, his utilization of talents and energy, and his utilization of time and his works. His works when he was a teenage. Imam Bukhari. His name was simple. Muhammad Ismail Ibrahim. Or if you want the traditional, Muhammad ibn Ismail ibn Ibrahim al-Bukhari. But I like the name. Muhammad, Prophet. Ismail, Prophet, the son of Ibrahim. This is how you learn it, if you want. His kunya was Abu Abdullah. Abu Abdullah. Does this mean that he had children or a child called Abdullah? Unfortunately, not. He did not have children. Was he married? There are actually lack of resources on this issue, which is unfortunate. Whether he was married or not was disputable, but scholars tend to think that he was married, number one. Whether he had children or not is also disputable, but strong scholars tend to think that he had no sons or no children. He was born in 194 Hijri, and you can convert it into Christian era, and died in 256 Hijri. He was born in Bukhara, which is now in Uzbekistan. And Bukhara was known for bringing great scholars such as Ibn Sina. He had an elder brother called Ahmed, which no one knows about. You see, I'm jumping, you see, sometimes I'm so excited about something that I jump to something else. You see, we are interested about Bukhara. We are interested about Ahmed. We are interested about the children of Bukhari. We are interested about the wife of Bukhari. You know why? Because of Bukhari. Because of Bukhari. So Bukhari brings fame to everyone that was connected to him. Do you understand? When you are good, you bring goodness to Whitechapel, if you are from East London. You bring goodness to your family. And when you die, sorry to say that, when you die, everyone will care not just about you, but everything that was associated with you. This is the jacket of Bukhari. If I said to you this, what will you say? This is the trousers of Bukhari. It's the trousers of Bukhari that if you saw it at the time of Bukhari thrown on the, you will not take it, pick it up, but you will pick it up now probably. Because it's Bukhari. Isn't that right? Anyway, so, however, Imam Bukhari lived as an orphan because his father passed away at a young age. And this is what I mean when I say that those people lived severe conditions. He traveled a lot, many places that we will come to discuss when we talk about his teachers and his students. He died a sad death. And he died while he was sad of his people, of his society, and because of how people treated him. It's unfortunate that great people are not recognized until they pass away, until they die. Oh, Ibn Taymiyyah! You know Ibn Taymiyyah died in prison? You know this? Oh, Ibn Taymiyyah is great. Now you tell me he's dead. Even the people of his time attacked him. Ibn al-Qayyim, you know Ibn al-Qayyim that we all venerate? Ibn al-Qayyim was humiliated, and the humiliation at that time was to put someone on a donkey the other way around, and to blacken his face, and to make the women shout at him, and the children abuse him. Do you know that Ibn Qayyim went through that? Do you know that Ibn Taymiyyah died in the darkness of prison when they took his books, everything from him, that he had to write the tafsir of the Quran using chalk on the wall? And when he passed away, they found the tafsir on the wall. Amazing things. These are amazing. Those people who were not necessarily respected by their societies as we respect them today. Societies are usually blind to the greatness of people. You know why? Because they are contemporaries of those people. Think about us today. Think about us. If I told you I'm coming from the United States, if I told you I'm coming from 200 years back, but if I told you my name is Hisham, I live in Exeter, this is my mobile number. Oh, okay, fine. If I don't see you today, I'll see you tomorrow. Contemporary or contemporization makes people blind to the greatness of existing personality. Only when they die and depart, people begin to appreciate and recognize their value, which is unfortunate. It happens not only with scholars, it happens with us sons when our fathers pass away. I shout with my father and I struggle or I argue with my mother, and when she dies, I shed tears. I wish I cared for her more. I wish I spent more time with her. I wish when there was a camp or a conference and she said, stay with me because I need you to wash the dishes, I wish I heard and obeyed her. No, I was getting mobiles and text messages. Hey man, when are you going to be in the conference? To hell with my parents. Because hey, I have to serve Islam. Not knowing that Islam is served primarily through making your parents happy. Because when they are happy, you are going to be blessed in whatever you do. Brothers and sisters, you are going to be blessed in whatever you do. Do you know? Okay, let me shock you with it. Do you know that Imam Bukhari was blind at a certain stage in his life? Do you know that? Do you know that Allah made him see again with a stronger sight and vision because of the dua of his mother? Imagine Imam Bukhari was blind. How difficult it would be to write books, how difficult it would be to travel without a companion. He might have become frustrated and said, there is no hope, I'm blind. But because of the dua of his mother, she saw in a dream that Ibrahim alayhi salam came to her in that dream and said to her, لَقَدْ رَدَّ اللَّهُ بَصَرَ ابْنَكِ بِكَثْرَةِ بُكَاءَكِ وَكَثْرَةِ دُعَائِكِ. Ibrahim alayhi salam, look at this veneration. That who is bringing the good news? Not a postman. No, the father of the prophets, Ibrahim alayhi salam, is coming specially to, O mother of Bukhari, to give you this good news. And Nabi Ibrahim alayhi salam says to the mother of Bukhari, Allah have heard your prayers, and because of your tears day and night, he have returned the sight of Imam Bukhari to you. She woke up, she went to the room of Imam Bukhari, she woke him up, and he stood and said, oh mother, I can see you. And she cried and he cried, and his sight became more stronger than what it was before he lost it, so much so that the first book that he wrote at the age of 18 was written when there were no lamps, was written only through the light of the moon. In the dark, in Medina Mosque, he wrote his famous book, At-Tariq al-Kabir, the big history, and another book, he wrote Qataya al-Sahaba wa-Tabi'een, he wrote it in the dark through only the light of the moon with his powerful sight. And unlike Imam Ibn Kathir, he never lost his sight again. The mother, the father, it's important. They are important. Physical appearance, not a lot of literature on this. Suffice it to know that he was medium height, not that tall, not that short. He was extremely slim, and he lost his sight in his childhood, as I told you. His father, obviously, is called Ismail ibn Ibrahim, or Ismail Ibrahim, if you want. His kunya is Abul Hassan. His father had two main characteristics. One is that he was a great muhaddith, great scholar. He traveled a lot from Bukhara to Hijaz. Hijaz, when we say Hijaz, we mean Mecca and Medina. He met Malik, the father of Imam Bukhari, met Imam Malik, who was the great scholar. You know Imam Malik, the founder of the great Maliki Madhab, but he was the well-known scholar of Hijaz, of Mecca and Medina, during his time. And Hammad ibn Zayd, who was a great scholar of Basra. Imam Malik, I'm not going to discuss because I've discussed him in the past, but just to know about something about Hammad ibn Zayd. And brothers and sisters, you don't have to take notes of everything that I say, but let me just sweeten these settings, our gathering. Let's sweeten it by talking about these people that you might find difficult to pronounce, irrelevant, not famous, but wallahi, these were blessed people. And they don't care that much if we know them or we don't. It's enough for them that Allah knows them and Allah bless them. Bear in mind that those were the teachers of people that you venerate, like Imam Bukhari. Hammad ibn Zayd was a great scholar of his time, so much so that Abdurrahman ibn Mahdi, a great muhaddith, says, أَئِمَّةُ النَّاسِ فِي زَمَانِهِمْ, the great imams of their time in the Muslim Ummah at their time were Sufyan al-Thawri bil-Kufa. Sufyan al-Thawri, a great scholar and a great muhaddith. He says, Abdurrahman ibn Mahdi, there were four great scholars in their time, Sufyan al-Thawri bil-Kufa, Malik in Hijaz, Awza'i in Al-Sham, greater Syria, and Hammad ibn Zayd in Basra. I'm quoting you this so as to give you some background about Hammad ibn Zayd and contextualize him in how great he was. He was blind, died at the age of 81. So you can be blind and you can be great. You can be blind and you can be active, determined, and in service of your ummah. This is one thing about Imam, the father of Imam al-Bukhari, that he was a scholar. And his scholarship and his anxiety about hadith and his love for the hadith led him also to meet Imam Abdullah ibn al-Mubarak. Imam Abdullah ibn al-Mubarak, and I'll say something now and later about Imam Abdullah ibn Mubarak. One of my favorite, actually, scholars' books are written about him, many literature, unlike probably Hammad ibn Zayd, because he was a comprehensive person. Abdul Mubarak was a comprehensive character, was wealthy, was powerful, was physically strong. He can fight 6-7 people like in Indian movies at once. He was a mujahid. He was a alim. He was a scholar. He was a muhaddith. He loved Imam Abu Hanifa so much so. He was one of his students. He loved Al-Imam Al-Fudayl ibn Iyad. I mentioned these stories in the past. A fascinating scholar, Zahid and Abid. Abdullah ibn Mubarak, to me, is an ummah by himself. Okay, what is the link between Abdullah ibn Mubarak and the father of Imam Bukhari? A very trivial link, but yet significant, because when you meet great people, nothing is trivial. You know what you might identify as trivial? It's written and documented. The father of Imam Bukhari once met Abdullah ibn al-Mubarak and shook hands with him. And that was documented. This was the autograph that people were after. Not football players, not singers. No. I just want to shake your hand because this will be documented in history. And in the book of At-Tariq al-Kabir by Imam Bukhari that he has written when he was 18, he documented this incident. He wrote about his father. He said, my father, not of course my father, he said, Abu al-Hasan, Ismail, Ibn Ibrahim, Ibn al-Mughira, Ibn Bazdarba, this is the surname, Ibn Bazdarba, traveled to Hijaz, met Malik, and narrated a hadith by Hammad ibn Zayd and shook the hands of Abdullah ibn al-Mubarak. That's enough. That's enough. These people don't shake the hands of nasty people. If Abdullah ibn al-Mubarak extends his hand to shake it, that is a shahada, a jaza. That is a certificate for you. You can go and become mad and crazy and jump and dance up and down. I shook the hands of Abdullah ibn al-Mubarak. But he was not only a scholar, he was a businessman, a successful businessman, and his money was from halal. And when he was on his deathbed, he said to his student Ahmed ibn Hafs, Ahmed ibn Hafs is the student of the father of Imam ibn Bukhari. Imam Bukhari, you see how many names now we are coming through, being identified to. And this is good. I always think that, okay, you might be confused a little bit, but really, brothers and sisters, replace these rubbish names in your mind about this actor and this singer, and put Ahmed ibn Hafs, put Hamad ibn Zayd in your memory. Worship Allah through knowing them. Ahmed ibn Hafs, the student of the father of Imam Bukhari, says, I entered once to meet my sheikh, Ismail ibn Ibrahim, the father of Imam Bukhari. And I heard him say, لا أعلم من مالي درهم من حرام ولا درهم من شبه. He says, I don't know, or I am not aware of any dirham or penny that have entered my household, my pocket, that comes from a haram source or even from a doubtful source. And you might think, what's new about it? What's interesting, significant about this? Brothers and sisters, you might say that I am certain that my money is not from haram, but don't tell me that your money is at least not from doubtful sources. There are lots of things. I'm working in an office. For example, I'm working in an office where there are telephones, phones, and my boss says that this phone is for business use only through the work, and I call my wife, how are you? Salaamu alaikum, I miss you. This is doubtful income because you are using the telephone by saying doubtful, I don't mean that you put your hand in the pocket of others and take the money. No, doubtful means something that if the Prophet ﷺ encountered, he will not do. That's why when Prophet Muhammad ﷺ was walking and he saw a date, he says, لَوْلَا أَنَّ الْأَنْبِيَاءَ لَا تَأْكُلُ الصَّدَقَ لَأَكَلْتُهَا. That having it, if it's not for the fact that prophets do not eat from sadaqah, I would have picked it up and ate it. But if you found a five penny, you will eat it probably. You'll swallow it. Anyway, so these are the doubtful things that we mean. If you don't think that this is fascinating, well, this is fascinating because Ahmed ibn Hafs comments and says, when he heard this, فَتَصَاغَرَتْ إِلَيَّ نَفْسِي عِنْدَ ذَلِكَ. When he said this, the father of Imam Bukhari, I belittled myself only then. I'm doing lots of bad things, you know. Look at this. He's even talking about the doubtful. What about myself? And it's not necessarily that Ahmed ibn Hafs is a thief. No, but like Imam ibn Jawzi says, for those proud to humble themselves, and to humble yourself, you need to know that there are people who are more stricter than you are, more conservative than you are, to lessen your pride. So Imam Ahmed ibn Hafs says, I belittle myself only then. Actually, this comment shows the effect of teachers on students. And this is something that we will discuss in the third lecture. How Imam Bukhari benefited from his teachers and how Imam Bukhari helped educate his students. Not just in hadith. Brothers and sisters, the significance of Imam Bukhari is not the fact that he wrote Sahih al-Bukhari. Sahih al-Bukhari now is printed by Dar al-Salam or this or that, translated into Urdu. Imam Bukhari could have said, okay, I'm writing this book, I'm giving it to this publisher. No, it's through his personal interaction and the values and what he stood for that influenced people like Imam Muslim, that said to Imam Bukhari, Ya Imam, allow me to kiss your feet. Because you are Sayyid al-Muhaddithin and Sayyid al-Fuqaha. It's not just because Imam Bukhari was fascinating in hadith, because Imam Muslim was also fascinating in hadith. And probably Sahih Muslim is easier to read than Imam Bukhari. But it's because he interacted with Imam Bukhari. He saw Imam Bukhari. He lived with Imam Bukhari. He fought for Imam Bukhari when Imam Bukhari was divorced and kicked out from Bukhara, from Samarkand, from Naysabur. It was only Imam Muslim that stood with Imam Bukhari when no one attended the circle of Imam Bukhari, because there was an order from that ruler that whoever attends the circle of Imam Bukhari is a man of bid'ah. Imam Muslim said, I don't care. And Imam Muslim was the only one that was sitting with Imam Bukhari. Now don't tell me that this enthusiasm was because of the powerful memory of Imam Bukhari, or that because Imam Bukhari reached the stage of telling Muslims some hadiths that Muslim never heard of. No. It was because Imam Muslim fell in love with this personality and so and said that this is someone that I can risk my entire relation with society, with the ruler, in befriending this personality. His mother, the mother of Imam Bukhari, she was an abida and sahibat karamat wa da'wa mustajaba. She was a great worshipper. And imagine, brothers and sisters, when a great muhaddith like the father of Imam Bukhari marries a great abida, what are the product? No less than Bukhari. Brothers and sisters, and sisters, you are responsible for the children. I have a daughter. I love her so much, but I don't have the time to spend with her as I would like to. She comes to me and says, let's draw together. Let's write together. And she always expects me to say to her that sentence, go to your mother. Go and help your mother. Just to give her any idea to get rid of her. Because I'm working, I'm writing, I'm reading. I have lots of stories, I have lots of ideas to give her, but I can't. What do? I push my wife to read. I push my wife to study, because she will be able to transform this knowledge, communicate that knowledge to my daughter. You are the sisters responsible. You are responsible as sisters, unmarried, at university. You are responsible potentially as future wives, and you are responsible as mothers. Men could be between inverted commas great, but they are useless because they are outside in the public sphere. It's the mother that brings the great people. And wallahi, brothers and sisters, if we were to write books about the role of mothers in bringing great people like Imam Shafi'i and Ahmed ibn Hanbal and Abu Hanifa, we will have volumes. It's unfortunate that we don't know anything about the mother of Imam Shafi'i, and we know everything about Imam Shafi'i, while I think that if it was not because of the mother of Imam Shafi'i, Imam Shafi'i would not have been known to us. Do you know that Imam Shafi'i was born in Asqalan, in Palestine, and it was only his mother that decided to take him all the way when he was a child to Mecca because she wanted him to become a great faqih? Do you know that? I always imagine and think, what if he remained in Palestine? What if his mother said, well, it's difficult to travel, expensive to travel. How many months it will take me to travel? No, I will travel. Because I want to live for that child. Do you know that Imam Ahmed ibn Hanbal was an orphan? And his father died when he was young. And his father died when he was... The father. The father died when he was 32. And the mother was in her 20s. The mother could have got married. Could have said, okay, I'll live my life. I will take care of my son, but I would like to get married. No, she sacrificed her entire life for Ahmed ibn Hanbal. And Ahmed ibn Hanbal loved her so much that he did not get married until she passed away. And she passed away when he was 40 years old. And some of the sons of Imam Ahmed ibn Hanbal were so young when Imam Hanbal reached the age of 70. So she was a great worshipper, that is, the mother of Imam Bukhari. She did lots of dua for him, and Allah returned his sight for Imam Bukhari for the sake of his mother. And that's why one of the books of Imam Bukhari that we unfortunately don't have access to, it has been lost. And there are many books of Imam Bukhari that have been lost. One of the books was called Kitabu Birr al-Walidayn, taking care of the parents and making birr and treating them well. And he collects all the hadith about Birr al-Walidayn. Subhanallah, many scholars venerated their mothers. You know, brothers and sisters, that the students of Imam Abu Hanifa, I'm sorry to say this, hated the mother of Imam Abu Hanifa, hated to see the mother of Imam Abu Hanifa appear suddenly in the midst of the circle. You know why? Because the moment she appears, Imam Abu Hanifa has to stand up and say to her, oh mother, what do you want? She says, I can't go to sleep. Come with me and put me to sleep. And Imam Abu Hanifa will leave the circle. And Abu Yusuf is waiting. And Al-Hasan al-Shaybani is waiting. And all the scholars are waiting. Brothers and sisters, those are the potential scholars of the Ummah. They are witnessing their Shaykh venerate his mother. Do you imagine then Abu Yusuf coming and abusing his mother if his Shaykh is venerating his mother? Brothers and sisters, do you know that Abu Yusuf venerated Imam Abu Hanifa so much so that when his son died, he did not make ghusl for his son? And you might say, what's this? Why? To that extent, yes, to that extent. He gave it to the neighbors and said, you make ghusl for my son. I have to attend the circle of Imam Abu Hanifa. They said, come on, your son is dead. He said, my son is dead. But if I miss the circle of Imam Abu Hanifa, I will miss my life as well. You see, he was the recorder. There were no mini discs at that time. He was the recorder of everything that Abu Hanifa uttered. And to him, this was more important than his son. Now imagine. Imam Abu Hanifa says, with all due respect, Abu Yusuf, and to your son, I'm leaving. I'm going to leave you because my mother is more important than me, and with all due respect, than your son and yourself. And he will take her, put her to sleep, probably tell her bedtime stories, I don't know, put her to sleep, and when she's asleep, he will come back. One scholar was reading Al-Muwatta of Imam Malik to his students in the house. And this is a story that I didn't want to tell, but since you are a lovely audience, I will tell you the story. And suddenly he stood up, and the students, what happened? Why did he stand up? He said, I saw my mother coming out of the second floor of the house. There were two floors. And she was walking. And believe it or not, don't throw me with tomatoes. Do you know what he said? He said, and I never sit while my mother stand up. How many times do you see your mother in the kitchen washing the dishes and you are crossing your legs and watching, I don't know, Spider-Man or a movie, or how many times? And when she says, even when she says, come and help, come and do that, oh, come on. And then when a brother calls, Assalamu alaikum, brother. Yes, I'm ready to come. Inshallah, conference. Yes, yes, Islam. Islam is the way. Islam is the solution. Assalamu alaikum. Mother, Spider-Man again. Yani, no, these were genuine people. And this person who stood up for Muwatta, he did not stand up because he knew that the students will document that. Imam Abu Hanifa did not go and put his mother to sleep because he was anticipating that Abu Yusuf will one day narrate the story. No. These were people of ikhlas. They knew that if it was not for the mother, he would not have come to this world. Imam Bukhari lived at a very difficult time. You know, brothers and sisters, the Abbasite period. We go into a little bit of history here, and I might bore you a little bit, but I'll try to become as interesting as possible. You know that Islamic history begins with the Seerah, with the time of the Khilafah al-Rashida, and then 90 years of an Umayyad period, 400 years of an Abbasite period, and then Mamluk period, and then an Ottoman period, and then the demolition of the Khilafah. This is 1,400 years. Fine. But this is, we said it now in less than 2 seconds. Now, Imam Bukhari, in a nutshell, let's zoom the camera now, have existed in the later part of the Abbasite Khilafah, which is bad news. Because the later part of the Abbasid Khilafah was corruption, was chaos, and that's why the Tatar came and destroyed Baghdad, and the Abbasids shifted their Khilafah to Egypt. During his time, people became less committed to Islam. People were very much influenced by the Roman civilization, Roman practices, because I'm talking primarily about Bukhara, which is far away from the Abbasid center, the Abbasid center being Baghdad. So Bukhara is Bukhara, for you to know, is just at the eastern part, towards the eastern part of Iran. Okay, so Uzbekistan is towards the eastern part of Iran. Towards the eastern part of Iran is Khorasan. Khorasan is a big region that had many scholars coming from Khurasan. Imam Abu Hamid al-Ghazali is from Khurasan. They were not Shia. They were not even Iranians. No, they were Persians. But when Islam conquered, they became Arabized. And that's why Imam Ghazali writes in Persian and writes in Arabic. Khurasan was this center for sciences. Now, outside, just outside the outskirts of Khurasan, in the borders of what used to be USSR, was Bukhara, Samarkand, and Khwarizm, which is now in Uzbekistan. Bukhari lived there. I'm saying this to tell you one thing, that when the Abbasid period, or when the Abbasid caliphate deteriorated, it deteriorated most visibly in Khurasan and in Bukhara. Corruption on the political level and on the social level. People were drinking, people were dancing, people were doing all sorts of things, influenced by the Romans, influenced by the Persians. Bear in mind that Bukhara was newly conquered as a what later became a Muslim land. You know when Bukhara was conquered? At the time of the Umayyads. And that's why Bukhari is originally a fire worshipper. The grandfather of his grandfather was a fire worshipper. Like a great Muslim scholar now who is originally a Hindu or a Christian. So Bukhari is not that person who is a Qurayshite, an Arab, etc., etc. On the science level, the Abbasid period was the golden period for the scholars. So during Bukhari, do you know who existed? People like Ahmed ibn Hanbal, people like Imam Muslim, people like Imam Tirmidhi, people like Imam Nisa'i, people like Ibn Majah, people like Abu Dawood, people like Abu Zur'at al-Razi, people like Abu Hatim al-Razi, Muhammad ibn Bashar, and others and others and others. I'm not trying to impress you with names, but these are names that existed, and it's only honest that I tell you about these names. So on the sciences level, hadith was flourishing, traveling movement of people continuously, the fiqh of the four imams was documented, students were crystallized, other madhahib flourished, other than the four, not just the four. There was the madhab of Al-Layth ibn Sa'd in Egypt, and there was the madhab of Al-Imam Al-Awza'i in Al-Sham. Some people say that Imam Bukhari had his own madhab, but it demolished, it eroded, because he had no committed, disciplined students. And there is a great debate among scholars whether Imam Bukhari was a mujtahid or not. Some people say he was a follower of the madhab of Imam Shafi'i, but a lot of the scholars say that he was a mujtahid. Books of tafsir were there, a lot. Books of tariq, history, biographies, tarajim. Okay, what's the point? The point is one point. A, he was relevant to your time. There is Whitechapel Mosque, but Saturday night, close to Whitechapel Mosque, there are nightclubs and pubs. There are East Londons and the restaurants, and all the English come to celebrate tandoori chicken and the curry. There is this and there is that. And you are in between, fortunately or unfortunately, struggling about citizenship. Struggling, is this Dar al-Kufr or Dar al-Ahd or Dar al-Islam? Struggling. Struggling about your identity. Struggling whether to keep a beard or not, to wear hijab or not, to cover your face if you are a sister or not, to have the trousers above the ankle or below it. Music is haram or halal. Halal chicken is halal or haram. Vinegar is halal or haram. Struggling with these issues. Because they are specific to your culture. This is A. B. You have talents. You have talents. How are you going to utilize your talent? You are charming. This is a talent. You are charming. Are you going to chat up girls because you are charming? Or you are going to attract people to Islam because you are charming. You have powerful memory. Are you going to do like Dustin Hoffman in Rayman, learning about cards and gambling to make as much money to Tom Cruise as possible? Or are you going to utilize your powerful memory in learning more and more Quran and Hadith? How are you going to utilize it? So Imam Bukhari is relevant in two ways. A, that he lived a corrupted period. But he did not become corrupt. And B, he was talented. He chose to to utilize his talent for the service of Allah and Islam. You live in a corrupted period. Difficult period after 11th of September. Difficult period. But there are LMC. There are Muslimat. There are halaqa circles. There are camps. There are audio taping. There are people coming to you, talk about Imam Bukhari. There is sahwa, there is revival. Are you going to stand behind or jump over the wagon and contribute to this movement? And how are you going to contribute? Cross your legs and criticize? Or use your talent in organization, editing, computer skills, economics, mathematics? All what you think about is when to graduate, get married, have a mortgage, put my children in private school, and then die. If this is your concern, then salamu alaykum. But if your concern is to attain all this, but to also make a sister wear hijab, make a brother pray, make someone shed tears because he heard you, because he saw you, then welcome. And salamu alaykum as well, but welcome. So what did he do? He learned the Quran and became a memorizer of the Quran at the age of 10. So he recognized his talent. He says, "Ulhimtu hifdh al-hadith." I have been inspired to memorize hadith. He says this. And in another narration, he says, "Hubbiba ilayya hifdh al-hadith." Allah made me love hadith. Brothers and sisters, Imam Bukhari loved hadith. I'm sorry to say this, in the same way that you are mad, some of you, mad about music. And you listen to Quran only occasionally, and when the voice of the Qari is only melodious. Otherwise, you will not listen. No, Imam Bukhari venerated any hadith. If you want to attract his attention, just say, قال رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم, and he will listen. So he recognized this talent. And he traveled at the age of 16, leaving his mother that he loved so much, and leaving Ahmed, his brother, and lived alone abroad. At the age of 11, he entered into the circle and sat down and attended the dars of Sheikh Al-Imam Al-Dakhili, one of his early shuyukh. And Al-Dakhili was reading or narrating some hadiths. And he said, narrated Sufyan, narrated Abi Al-Zubayr, narrated Ibrahim. So Sufyan heard this hadith from Abi Zubayr, heard this hadith from Ibrahim, heard this hadith from X, Y, Z. This is the sanad, isnad, or the chain of reporters, or the chain of narrations. You are listening here, in that circle, fine. Sufyan, Abi Yazid, Hisham comes and says, Ahmed ibn Hafs. Okay, fine, Ahmed ibn Hafs. Because I don't know the difference, fine. Well, you have here a genius who knows the difference. At the age of 11, he raises his hand and says, Ya Sheikh, Sufyan never met Abi Zubayr. So he could not have narrated this hadith from Abi Zubayr. And Al-Dakhili was astonished. Who's talking? Thousands of people. Thousands of people are sitting. And I literally mean thousands. You know, brothers and sisters, in these circles, there are no microphones. But the speaker is not expected to shout. So how do people listen at the back? There were dictators. So someone is sitting at the back, he listens, and then he shouts at the... Brothers and sisters, these circles, let me tell you how they are organized, okay? The sheikh sits close to the minbar. And the people sitting at their right hand and the left hand, his right hand or left, has to be senior people. Like in the haram, you see Sheikh al-Shurayim, and the people who are praying behind are all huffaz. You cannot go there. You cannot reach the police that will... Second, third row are all huffaz. And then comes the less senior. So in these circles, only the senior people. That's why Imam Abu Hanifa will not allow anyone to sit next to him but Abu Yusuf. So that when they discuss an issue, and Imam Abu Hanifa was the busiest, the loudest, the very shabby, disorganized circle. the students used to disturb the people who are praying in the mosque because they are debating all the time. Unlike the circle of Imam Malik, very quiet. If you ask Imam Malik, what is your dalil? He will beat you up. He have two, really, I mean, this is, I'm not kidding you. He has two people. I'm not yani, racist or anything. There were two black people, very powerful people, sitting at his back. If he asks those people to beat you up, you are in bad trouble. And Imam Malik does not like interruption. He does not like you to ask him, what's your dalil? So if there are brothers here that are crazy about what's your dalil, what's your usul, they will be beaten up by Imam Malik. Imam Abu Hanifa is fascinated about this. He likes it. He says, okay, what do you think about this mas'ala? For example, you say the students, yeah, Imam, this is halal. He says, no, this is haram. I'll prove it. And he gives you 30 dalil. And then he says, okay, are you convinced? They say, okay, of course, 30 dalil. He said, well, bad news, it's haram. And he gives them 40 dalil that it's haram. And they revoke. This is how, and then when they reach a conclusion, he says to Abu Yusuf, write it here in Bab al-Nikah. Write it here under the chapter of marriage, if it was a marriage issue. Okay? There were scholars that did not like anyone to sit next to them. Just he likes space. Okay, there is a scholar, sometimes you might call him mad scholar. Lots of stories about him here, and you laugh. His name is Al-A'mash. Al-A'mash, brothers and sisters, was blind. And he was bad-tempered. Yani, bad-tempered, I mean it. Not two senior bodybuilders next to him. He had a dog. And you know, and if you make him upset, he will just let the dog loose. And the dog used to guard the house. If you were a student, you came early in the morning and you disturbed him, the dog will run after you. And he always looks at the window and say, I know that you will never desert me because of my ill morals, because you need my knowledge. So he was quite confident. And he doesn't like anyone sitting next to him. One person wanted to feel a little bit intelligent, wanted to record his name in that book, and he thought he's blind, so he came and sat next to him. So Imam A'mash is very, very intelligent. And every time he says, Haddathana, narrated so-and-so, and then he spits on his left. And then Haddathana, so, and then he spits on his left. And the student says, why are you spitting? He says, no, I have bad ideas, you know, I'm spitting on the devil. Until he left the circle, and they then realized that no one sits next to Imam A'mash. Very dangerous scholar. There were scholars, by the way, that needed total quietness. Not even mobile phones has to be switched off. If you suddenly, with your pencil, you need to sharpen the pencil, he will just, if he was holding a microphone, he'll put the microphone and say, see you tomorrow. No sharpening, no whatever. So there were these kind of, I actually forgot what I wanted to say. But anyway, yes, Imam Dakhili. So Imam Dakhili, suddenly an 11 years old boy. He's not playing with his Game Boy or, no. He's saying, what you're saying is wrong. To Imam Dakhili. Imam Dakhili was the Sheikh of Bukhara. Sheikh of Bukhara. So, Fantaharani, Imam Bukhari narrates the story to one of his students who asked him, how did you begin seeking knowledge? Fantaharahu, so he reproached me. He said, shut up! Be quiet! And what did he do? Did he cry and go to his mother? No. He said very politely. He said, irja ila al-asl. Go and consult the originals. Every Sheikh, every muhaddith narrates from memory. But he has got things written down by way of reminding him. So Imam Bukhari has got books that he goes and consults. But if you ask him a question on the street, he will not say, let me consult my books. Like I'm consulting here my notes. But he has to have originals written. Okay? So Imam Bukhari says, irja ila al-asl. Go back to the written sources. So Imam Dakhili said, okay, and he went back and came and said, فَمَا هُوَ يَا غُلَام? Okay, what is it then? He wants to test the mind of this person. You remember the chain of narration. Sufyan narrated from Abi Zubair. Narrated from? You forgot already. Ibrahim. You will not do well with Imam Bukhari. You see, with Imam Bukhari, brothers and sisters, I'm not kidding you. If he took your mobile numbers, all of you, he would memorize them. Your mobile numbers. Okay. He doesn't need these memories in the mobile to record. He will memorize all the... And you want me to shock you? He will memorize them in the sequence that you've given him. He will know that this is the mobile number of this sister sitting here, this is the mobile number. And if you change the mobile number sequence, he will tell you number 50 must come in 49. He will tell you this. Genius. But I'll prove it. You might say, I think you're talking rubbish. No, I'll prove it to you, but in a while. So he said, what is it then? He said, Sufyan narrated from Az-Zubayr, narrated from Ibrahim. What's the difference? Abi Zubayr. And this is Az-Zubayr. Me and you, we don't know the difference between a cabbage potato and a carrot. But the Muhaddithin know the difference between Abi Zubayr and Az-Zubayr. Because, you know, chain of narration tells me what? It tells me the name. It tells me the place. It tells me the birth. It tells me whether he has met the following person or not. It tells me that the places that he traveled. So if Sufyan was in Bukhara, Az-Zubayr never traveled to Bukhara, he was in Baghdad, how else could they have met? They didn't have MSM or Messenger or... No, no. You know, they have to see each other. They have to meet each other. Then Ad-Dakhili says, Sadaqt. You are right. But this was a turning point. Not to Bukhari. He knew that he's a genius. But a turning point in society. Now we know that there is an 11 years old boy that is a genius. At the age of 16, he says, so this is at the age of 10, he memorized Quran. At the age of 11, he did this Dakhili thing. Stretching his intellectual muscles and showing his memory. At the, you know, 11. No beard, no hair, nothing. Child. Brothers and sisters, bring me an 11 years old boy today and let us assess his concerns. Let us assess his concerns. Go to his room and see what is on the room, what is on the wall, what photos, what pictures. This is his life. Toys and if it's a girl, Barbie, I don't know, maybe at the age of 11, something else. But these were the people. This were was the concern. Then he says, at the age of 16, I memorized the book of hadith of Imam Ibn al-Mubarak, because at that time there was no Imam Bukhari, no books of Bukhari or Muslim. Ibn al-Mubarak is the person that I told you, that was the friend of his father, or that his father shook his hand. Imam Ibn al-Mubarak had a compilation of hadiths. Where are they now? We don't know. Destroyed. So he memorized them all at the age of 16. Imam Ibn al-Mubarak, just to introduce the character gradually, when he used to pray, he used to leave the masjid, not sit with the people, and go home and read books about the biographies of the companions and the Sahaba. And hadith. I told you he's a great muhaddith. And the people, one of his students said to him, أنت إذا صليت لما لا تجلس معنا? When you finish prayer, why don't you sit with us? He said, أجلس مع الصحابة والتابعين أنظر في كتبهم وآثارهم فما أصنع معكم أنتم تغتابون الناس. He says, I am sitting with the companions and with the tabi'een. You see, reading the books means sitting with them. That's why now we are all sitting, inshallah, with Imam Bukhari. He says, I am sitting with the sahaba and the tabi'een. Why should I sit with you? You do nothing but backbite. You do nothing but backbite. And he's talking about students that do not backbite. But now, because he's measuring them against the sahaba and the tabi'een, they are rubbish. So if he was to sit with us, he would spit on us like al-A'mash. He would not sit with us at all. You are backbiting, you are gossiping, you are lying, you are stupid, you are all sorts of things. So why shouldn't I sit with the Sahaba and the Tabi'in? This is just a glimpse about Ibn al-Mubarak, but we'll revisit him in due course. And Imam Bukhari also learned the book of Waqi' Ibn al-Jarrah, a great muhaddith, great scholar. He also had his own compilation of hadiths that Imam Bukhari memorized at the age of 16. Where is this book now? We don't know. Destroyed. Imam Waqi' was famous for his ibadah and his devotion and his powerful memory. He used to narrate 700 hadiths on the spot. 700 hadith on the spot. One of his students asked him once, what is the medicine for good memory, powerful memory? Some students used to have these particular material to keep, like you have tea or coffee to keep you awake. There were some, like a blazer or some material known at that time to strengthen the memory. So one of his students said to him, what do you take to strengthen your memory? Do you smoke or do you have drugs or something? No, of course not. So what do you do to strengthen your memory? He said, وَإِنْ أَعْلَمْتُكَ الدَّوَاءِ اسْتَعْمَلْتُهُ قلت إي والله. And if I told you the medicine, will you use it? He said indeed. O Imam Waqi, قال ترك المعاصي ما جربت مثله للحفظ. Abstaining from sins, I have never seen a medicine like it. This is something for you. If you want to have powerful memory, good eyesight, good physical body, abstain from sins. Because Allah will bless you. Allah will bless you. Our bodies, by the way, and you know this, are tear and wear. If you look too much to girls, if you look too much to indecency, the eyes, you will wear glasses the following day. But if you read your Quran, if Allah will bless it. And even when you come blind, tear and wear for the sake of Allah. This is the zakah that you pay to Allah for the sake of a decent eye or a decent leg or a decent hand. And he, Imam Waqi', would read third of the Quran every night and pray tahajjud every night and yastaghfirullah hatta al-fajr, ask Allah's forgiveness until fajr time. These are the kind of people that Imam Bukhari used to sit with. Physically, no, through their legacy, through their books. We have to conclude at the age of 16, when as soon as he memorized these books, he left with his mother and with his brother Ahmed to Hajj. He went to Mecca to do Hajj. Then he said to his mother, to his brother, you go back to Bukhara and I will stay here, continuing to seek knowledge, because this is the time that I have to now go outside Bukhara. The systematic way of learning hadith or fiqh or anything was to sit and exhaust the shuyukh of your local region, city, and then after you utilize them, maximize your utilization of their knowledge, you go back to the nearby city, nearby cities, etc. And this is a talab, al-rahla fi talab al-ilm. So he went from Bukhara at the age of 16, went and stayed in Mecca for 2 years. So he left Mecca at the age of 18 and stayed in Medina since age of 18, stayed there for some years before he went back, before he continued to travel to Baghdad, Basra, Kufa, Egypt. He went to all these kind of places which we will discuss later. But my point is this, when I'm thinking about how to make him relevant, you see, a lot of you brothers and sisters, maybe, not a lot of you, I don't know, but a lot of you probably are away from home. You come from Manchester, Birmingham, Bradford, you left your parents there, and you are studying at Queen Mary, Guildhall, Imperial, I don't want to do any marketing here because we are recording, Oxford, Cambridge, whatever. So you are living alone. You are living in halls of residence. You are living in a troubled place, seeing lots of things that you should not be seeing, etc., etc., and you know what I mean. Allah is with you. Okay, we heard this before. Fine. But the point is this, that the concept of living abroad when you are a teenager, the concept of being alone when you are a teenager or at your 20s, is a very dangerous thing. It's a very dangerous thing, because then you have lots of spare time, and then you have lots of, you are bored, etc., etc. So you begin to do lots of things that, you know the saying, the idle mind is the devil's workshop. Now, Imam Bukhari left his mother and his brother when he was 16. Now what does he do? Does he start smoking or experiment with drugs or and then become religious when he joins the Islamic Society at the university? No. As soon as he stays in Mecca, he begins to write books. And he finishes two massive books when he was at the age of 18. He wrote At-Tariq al-Kabir, The Big History, which was the history of the companions and the tabi'een. And what was he doing? What he was doing in this book was exactly what we, not exactly, but even better, what we are doing now. He was writing biographies of the Sahaba and the tabi'een that are relevant to the hadith. So narrated Muawiyah ibn Abi Sufyan. Okay, who is Muawiyah ibn Sufyan? Then he says Muawiyah ibn Abi Sufyan, born in so-and-so, traveled, became a Muslim in so-and-so. He met those scholars. He met those kind of people that are later will become relevant to you understanding Sahih al-Bukhari if you are studying the Sanad of reporters or the chain of narration. So it's a book of hadith, but more of a history of the muhaddithin. And he wrote it in the darkness, using only the light coming from the moon. This is someone who used to be blind. Bear this in mind and never forget that. And people writing at a young age is not something that is, it might be fascinating now, of course, when us doctors write only PhD theses at the age of 30 or whatever, and we are happy, excited about a PhD thesis that is publishable, while Imam al-Nawawi, who lived for 43 years and died at the age of 43, had these massive amount of books, including Al-Majmu', great book in the fiqh of Al-Shafi'i, and Riyad al-Salihin and others, doing nothing in his life but writing books, some of them. In fact, I don't want to would not go to the toilet because they have no time but to write books. And Imam al-Nawawi, and we will come to talk probably about him, although I did in the past, used to sleep on his books and just sleep for 5 minutes, wake up, put some cold water, gain his activity and continue to write again, as if he knew that he was going to live for only 43 years. Now you have a brother saying, I'm only 30. Okay, fine. You better have some lollipop and enjoy your life. So these people were productive. So at the age of 16, he began writing this book, and you might say, this is amazing. Well, let me shock you even more. Imam al-Suyuti, a great mufassir of Quran, he says, I memorized the Quran when I was below 8, and my father used to take me to the circle of Imam Ibn al-Hajar al-Asqalani, who is a great scholar, and maybe in the future we can talk about Imam Ibn Hajar al-Asqalani, who had a marvelous sister that took care of him, who had a marvelous wife that supported him. He married her when he was 22 and she was 18. Anyway, this Imam Ibn Hajar al-Asqalani, who wrote Fath al-Bari, Sharh Sahih al-Bukhari, Imam Suyuti, when he was 8, he used to attend the circle of Ibn Hajar al-Asqalani, who used to take him, his father. And he used to stay for hours and hours and hours listening to Ibn Hajar al-Asqalani. And when he was at the age of 8, he says, صَنَّفْتُ كِتَابًا فِي تَفْسِيرِ الْبَسْمَلَةِ وَالْإِسْتِعَاذَةِ. I wrote a book about the meaning of Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim and about the meaning of أَعُوذُ بِاللَّهِ مِنَ الشَّيْطَانِ الرَّجِيمِ. These people were writers when they were wearing... Anyway, so they were great writers at that early age because they didn't have TV at that time. So yes, these were great scholars. And with this, we conclude. I apologize for taking that much time, but I think we've contextualized now Imam al-Bukhari, but you haven't heard anything yet about Imam Bukhari. أقول قولي هذا واستغفر الله لي ولكم فاستغفروه إنه الغفور الرحيم.
Please proceed to the next CD.